Well, this is the first time that IEDs, improvised explosive devices, have been used successfully on U.S. soil. We've had bombings, of course. The Oklahoma City bombings, the Atlanta Olympic Park bombings come to mind. But those bombs were meant to blow up. IEDs, packed with nails, are meant to blow out, causing all the destruction we've seen. But security expert Fred Burton says officials can learn from those past bombings that the bomber today may not be who they thought it was. Fred investigated the first World Trade Center bombing, was involved with security for the Atlanta Olympics, and was deputy chief of counterterrorism for the State Department. He's now with the intelligence firm StopCo. Fred, what else are you thinking today?
The other interesting aspect as you look at this is the bomb maker actually the same person that placed the devices? Or do you have multiple actors engaged here?
Why is that important to you?
Bomb making is a skill. It's something that really you have to learn to do and to get it right. If you take the horrific bombings here at the Marathon, both of them worked, which is a rarity, to be blunt. Usually you have a malfunction like the underwear bomber where the device fails to detonate. So whoever constructed these devices, I think, has probably practiced in some arena somewhere, whether that be in the continental United States or abroad. Who knows at this point?
Well, stop there for a second, because actually you've been tweeting that bomb makers, this is important because bomb makers have unique signatures. Let's talk a little bit about these IEDs. It's an uncomfortable conversation, especially where we are here in Boston, but you know, how they work. We know that these were pressure cookers. We can even see 6L, 6 liter, right on one of the shards that's left. We know they were packed with a certain kind of powder, much like a gun is, that instead of exploding, it burns. Tell us more about how it works.
If you look at the photographs, it looks to me probably would hold 10 to 12 pounds in total. So the actual weight of each one of the improvised explosive devices, provided they're both pressure cookers, are probably 10 to 12 pounds each. So the bomb maker is going to have a very specific signature as to how he, and in all probability it is a male, place the items inside the actual pressure cooker. And inside the pressure cooker, you're going to have probably black powder surrounded by nails, BBs, other kinds of metal, compacted in and kind of pressed in to see how much you can get in there. Usually bomb makers put more than is really needed, which it sometimes causes malfunctions.
Well, we understand that what happens with the powder is that it burns, it causes a gas, which then causes the pressure cooker to explode, unlike a gun, for instance, where it would cause a bullet to leave through the exit of the gun. But we understand when you talk about signatures that if people can even find a wire afterwards, they might have used a plier a certain way. I mean, what are the kinds of things that would be informative to investigators?
And that's a very important point. It is how wire is crimped, how wire is cut, how wire is twisted together, the actual, perhaps, glue, the manufacturer of the nails, are they roofing nails? That's the kind of forensics that you look at with a bomb maker's signature.
You mentioned this bomb maker might, you know, have had to try it out. Well, we've been amazed at the amount of YouTube videos of people using pressure cooker bombs for sport, almost. Pressure cookers set out in fields and people shooting at them to set them off. I mean, we did not know that this was so widespread in the U.S.
This is one of the issues that unless you have this kind of horrific event, these are the kinds of explosions that take place around the country all the time. It's not unusual for biker gangs, white hate organizations, disgruntled spouses to manufacture all kinds of improvised explosive devices. There's a tremendous amount of bombings around the United States all the time. They're usually more personal and directed towards specific individuals, but there's a tremendous amount of explosive materials that gets stolen, shows up missing, and that is used for a commercial application all around the country.
And you remind us in July of 2011, a bombing was potentially stopped. We remember when Army Private First Class Nasser Abdo was arrested. He was charged with planning attack. What was he found with?
a pressure cooker IED. The other fascinating thing that I think someone needs to look at in context of this is if you look at major sporting events in 2005, we had a individual who tried to get in with a suicide vest into a University of Oklahoma football game in Norman. You have the Olympics in Atlanta. And even if you go back to the Los Angeles Olympics, you had another improvised explosive device that was planted by a security guard who wanted to discover that, to be the heroic kind of motive. So, you know, there's a long history of these kinds of things happening at these events.
Well, we know that the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have been worried about pressure cooker bombs. They issued a warning in 2004, another in 2010. And in 2010, they said pressure cookers could conceal IEDs. So is this, I hate to say it, but are people like yourself thinking this was something that was bound to happen?
We should not get fixated on the pressure cooker per se, because this could have been contained in a pipe bomb or any other kind of object that you want to conceal explosives in. To me, the targeting of this very prominent international event where the eyes of the world are looking at Boston on this day is the important variable here.
But what would somebody be saying? Because this brings us back to investigations you were involved with, the Atlanta Olympic bombing, the Oklahoma City bombing, the Unabomber. All of these, we understand, are what officials call single-issue organizations. They all were angry at the government. What message do you think is being sent here?
The psychological profile of this specific bomb maker, literally you have a suspect list that could be all over the map. If you have a singleton, this is your biggest fear as an investigator because it's extremely difficult to locate that person.
And by the way, you remind us for a long time, Richard Jewell, the security guard at the Olympics, was a suspect. He's since died, but died a broken-hearted man because he was not the bomber, and it's worth keeping that in mind. Fred Burton, he was part of the security team for the Atlanta Olympics. He also investigated the first World Trade Center bombing and served as Deputy Chief of Counterterrorism for the State Department's Diplomatic Security Service, now with the intelligence firm Stratfor. Fred, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And a few more notes from Boston. We now know the third fatality in the bombing was Liu Lingzi, a Boston University grad student from China. Among the injured, 17-year-old Cindy Corcoran. She's reportedly asking the man who staunched her bleeding, known only as Matt, to please come forward. Her mother, Celeste, lost both legs. Nicole Gross was at the finish line with her sister. Nicole's legs were broken. Her sister's amputated. Terrible, terrible stories out of Boston. Back in a minute, here and now.